It's just Marina Arashlita. Yes, Howard, maybe you can tell us what DNA stands for. I had written that out here, but I wasn't quite sure how to pronounce it. Oh, that's it. Yes. Well, as they say, it's all to do with the genes, isn't it? Yes. Like this son, Golders Green, went to a shul in China, and you know, he went up to the rabbi, Shalom Aleichem, and he says, "Who are you?" "Oh, I'm from Golders Green." He says, "That's funny, you don't look Jewish." But DNA, yes, it reveals more sometimes than people want it to reveal. The fellow who had a test, and the doctor said to him, "Well, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is that your cholesterol level is down, but the bad news is your DNA proves that you've done a crime." Yeah, well, when it comes to yichus, we always talk about yichus amongst the Jews, you know. It's a bit like a potato. Most of it is buried in the ground. But nevertheless, yichus, better it starts with you than it ends with you. DNA, they say, is all about the genes. And the interesting thing about it is that it is a genetic blueprint, like a fingerprint over the whole body, that even from a tiniest piece of skin or sweat or whatever it is, scientists are now able to determine your identity virtually exclusively to your... I say virtually exclusively because I don't think they say 100%. I think they say 99.8%. But if it's to determine parenthood, let's say if a child's DNA does not match the DNA of the alleged father, he'll be excluded 100%. But usually what happens is on conception, a child inherits one half of his DNA from his mother and one half of his DNA from his father. So you might not be able to prove that somebody is a father, but you might be able to prove somebody is not a father. Correct me if I'm wrong, scientists, because I'm not a scientist myself. So why do we have to bother learning about this? Well, it is our duty to discuss anything which is part of Torah. And anything which is a modern discovery, as B'nai Torah people should ask, what has this got to do with the halacha? How do we apply it in halacha? How do we go about our everyday lives? And this is important because of practical halacha. And it's also important because it makes us realize that Torah is all embracing and all encompassing, applying to all times, ages, and so on. So the questions which are asked come from a contrast which was brought out by the Beis HaMedrash in Bnei Brak of Rav Vosner Shlita, and they also coordinated with Rav Nissen Karlitz Shlita, and there were a number of questions which were put. DNA is relevant, and how can it be applied to a variety of circumstances in halacha? Question number one. Is it possible to rely on DNA in order to assemble together various parts, say, of a body for burial purposes? Rachmona litzlon, when the body is split up from a terrorist attack or whatever it is, can we rely on DNA for purposes of kavura? Question number two. Can we use DNA to identify that a person has died for purposes of avelos? Namely, the children or the close relations, brothers, sisters and so on, do not know whether they have to sit shiva because it's not yet certain whether a particular person has died, but by DNA we may be able to identify him or her. The third question is it possible to confirm whether a person is a mamzer by such identification? Whether a person is fit to marry in the kahol or not fit to marry by virtue of mamzerus. Question number four. Is it possible to use DNA for purposes of inheritance to determine on Yerusha? And there are a number of aspects to this. If a person claims to be a son of a person who has died, and the other people might not even know that he is a son, or a person might even insist on a DNA test being taken to prove that way or the other way. Further, is it possible to use DNA for purposes of criminal evidence? Namely, and that's the way it is often used nowadays in the criminal court, that even by a small piece of skin left over at the scene of a crime, it is possible nowadays in the English courts to convict a criminal by virtue of that evidence. Now, in this country, criminal law differs from civil law in that civil law goes often on the balance of probability. That when there is evidence that it was probable that it's that way, we use that for purposes of evidence. Criminal law is done beyond all reasonable doubt. And beyond all reasonable doubt means that it's that way virtually certain that that person has done the crime. Can we use such criteria in halacha? Or do we say no? Beyond all reasonable doubt is not enough in criminal evidence in Jewish law. The next question is, can we allow an agreement by virtue of DNA? Namely, that it is certified that her husband has died by virtue of a DNA test, but no other evidence exists to certify that this has happened, can she then go and remarry? Those are generally the questions. There are some other questions which have come up, but we won't have time to go into those. Certainly, whenever any of these questions are answered, it needs to have a based in hamusmach, an expert based in, and it's not just enough to go according to the expert scientists. Now, even though according to statistics, we might say that DNA is a definite source of information, from the point of view of halacha, it is very difficult to say that this is a 100% proof. And then you might then go according to certain principles of what we can say is bosson rove. You go according to the majority likelihood. So there might be rove gomor or rove stump. The idea of DNA is a simon, a sign for something, to indicate. Now, there are different kinds of simonim in halacha. There's what's called simon muvhak biyoseh. Namely, is that sign conclusive proof, or is it, as we said before, beyond all reasonable doubt? And those are the problems that we've got in halacha. There are other issues as well, namely, we have to decover the mace. Can you take the mace out of its place of burial in order to carry out a DNA test? And on that, the poskim say, one shouldn't really take off any of the body, but one can use, say, certain drippings from the nose or excretions from the ear and that kind of thing. But we don't want to do anything to affect the actual body itself. So we do have to go to some poskim on this. And the Rambam writes in Hilchas Nachalas, not about DNA, but about certain principles. And I'm just going to quote, I haven't prepared the handouts, but I will just quote from certain parts of what he says. In Perek Zayin, Hilchas Nachalas, in the Sefer Mishpatim, the Rambam says, when it comes to the dinim of Yerusha, of inheritance, Ein Hayosh Nechlin Ad Shavu Rayot Berura Shemes Marishon. You do not confirm that you are now entitled to inherit when a person has died until that person has died with conclusive evidence, but he uses the words Shiaviu Rayot Berura, a clear proof. And the poskim actually pounce on this, because they say he hasn't here said Eidim, witnesses. There are many instances in halacha where we want two witnesses. And this is the case, for example, with criminal evidence. If you want to prove in court that somebody has killed someone, then you need two kosher witnesses. And when I say kosher witnesses, I don't mean you can eat them. They have to be eligible. So much so that the Gemara says that if you see somebody running away with a knife and it's dripping with blood and you see the victim actually dying there in the distance, that is not enough evidence in halacha to convict that man. You might know for sure in yourself because it's circumstantial evidence, but when it comes to conviction for such an offence, we do not convict. On that basis alone, you can't use DNA to convict the murderer in halacha. It's impossible, because you haven't got the two Eidim. But when it comes to the din of Nachalos, Ein HaYoshim Nochlim, and he talks about Raya Berura. Raya Berura means a clear kind of proof, which is a stage lower than Eidim, actual two people who have seen the actual crime going on. So he says, Im Shamu Bo Shemes, if people have just heard that the fellow has died, O Shabo Akum Masichin Afitumon, or a guy comes along and just says, without knowing why you're asking him the questions, that yeah, I heard so-and-so has died, that is not enough for purposes of Yerusha. Ein HaYoshim Ochlin Apiyah. It's no good. Certainly about if you see somebody going sinking in water, but it's water she'ein lahem sof, where you can't see all the edges. However, witnesses come along and they say that they know that he's died. Now, even though we will not allow his wife to remarry on that basis, we will allow Yerusha. Maim she'ein lahem sof, you don't see the edges of the water. Maim she'yesh lahem sof is when you see all the edges of the water. Sadly, many died in the concentration camps, and women were not sure whether they could remarry. And Rabbonim were using the principle of maim she'yesh lahem sof. If someone was seen going into a concentration camp, then they used the principle of maim she'yesh lahem sof to say, you've seen all the edges of the water, you see him going into the water, you don't see him coming out, we will say he's dead. And they used that principle to allow women to remarry. Unfortunately, there were times when it didn't work so thoroughly like that. But halakhically, that's the way it was used. Maim she'ein lahem sof is a difficulty. But for purposes of Yerusha, these are dinei mominus. So where, let's say, there's a rumor or there's somebody who saw him being attacked by an animal or a wild bird, or that he was wounded in war, and the report is back that he has died, but he died that they didn't quite recognize him or identify him, that he didn't have simanim muhakim, namely very, very clear cut. If you've never heard from the fellow again, he never picked up a phone, certainly, we say as far as Nachalo is concerned, we can rely on that. It's not enough, though, to allow women to remarry. We're worried about Isurei Kores. If a woman has to remarry, there might be Mamzerim. But when it comes to monetary matters, if we get some sort of chazoka that this has happened, then they can inherit. But when it comes to Hilchus Issues, I've got in front of me the Eben Ezer, Perek Yud Zayin, and the Sif Kaf Dalud. There, the Shulchan Aruch goes into various kinds of details what evidence we need to enable a woman to remarry. If we find a person has been murdered, and he is clearly identifiable and his whole body can be seen, then that is clear evidence to enable her to remarry. And that is called Simonim Muvhokim Beyoser. Complete is more than beyond all reasonable doubt. It's conclusive 100%. But if there are kalim at the scene of death, that is not enough. Let's say you see that his wallet is next to him. You can't identify the body, but his credit card is lying next to him. That is no good whatsoever. It's not evidence. The chashinon. And even though you might have certain simonim on the body, like you knew that he had a mole on his left arm, that is not enough evidence to enable her to remarry. And the remark goes into a number of examples there, which limbs are missing and which are not, and so on. There has to be something conclusive. So there we get a picture of how the halacha is already working in distinguishing between dinei mominus and dinei issus. So now in a summary, I will look at the details of the tshuva which has been issued by Rav Osner's Beis HaMedrash. When it comes to kavura, if one can rely on DNA for assembling different parts of the body, the psak is one can. We can use DNA for that purpose because it's not so crucial that there's an identification which has repercussions, like we're talking about the Aishas is remarrying. You're just looking for a way of deciding what belongs to where and what belongs to whom. And for that DNA you can use. Avelus. Avelus is a bit more complicated because of the trigger effect of it. The psak is that generally speaking one can use DNA to determine whether one should sit Shiva. The problem though is that once one sits Shiva, a woman who is then the widow will say that that's good enough for her to remarry. And the psak is that that is not good enough for her to remarry on its own. Therefore, they've made a distinction between when the Avelim would be, say, unmarried or where there is no wife. If there is no wife of the deceased and there are no shilas arising, as a, namely remarrying, then we say to the Krovim, okay, Sit Shiva. But they hold back, the Beis Din will hold back from saying Sit Shiva if there is an implication for remarriage. Because on its own, DNA will not be enough. So if we come to the subject now of Aguna, can we allow a woman to remarry purely on DNA alone? The psak of the Beis Din is, although it is compelling, it's not 100% enough. It's close to Siman Muvhak. But we need some additional form of evidence as well. So, we are generally lenient in halacha. To try and allow a woman to remarry, we might rely on one witness instead of two witnesses. Because aguna is a particular problem where Chazal were keen to find a way to enable her to remarry. But DNA alone, they say, is not enough. But if that is available, plus some other form of evidence, then they are going to say, yes, we will allow her to remarry.
In the case of people who were in the World Trade Center, they didn't find any kind of DNA, but there was evidence that somebody saw them going in, or?
I think that would be the case. I'm not familiar with what the psak was in various cases.
The psak I heard was that if, let's say, somebody called and said, I'm about to go now, and I'm on the 103rd floor, and so you should know that you can remarry.
Yeah,
having cases like that.
Yeah, well, that would follow with the principle of Mayim She'eish Lahem Sof, where if the person was seen going in, or the person phoned from the World Trade Center, then that is Mayim She'eish Lahem Sof, where one can see all the edges of the water, and that would be called conclusive in halacha.
Now, having seen it last Tuesday when I was at the construction site there, it really looks a place which is so well enclosed. But when you think of those 105 stories, it looks virtually impossible for anybody to escape from there.
Okay, thanks. Mamzerus is the next question. Can we prove that a person is a mamzer by means of DNA or not? There's an interesting story which once took place with Reb Moshe Feinstein. He went to a chuppah, and the mother of the chosan went up to him and said to him, I want to speak to you privately. And she sat down with him, she said to him, confess to you this, it's been on my conscience for a long time, but now that my son is about to get married, I have to be honest. And that is, some 20, 21 years ago, I was mezaneh, and this boy who is now getting married is not the son of my husband, but of somebody else, and he's a mamzer. Now, many rabbis might just say, well, we'd better just delay the chuppah and suspend the proceedings and we have to make further inquiries. But Reb Moshe Feinstein didn't do that. He asked her one question. He said to her, did you tell anybody else about this? She said, no, nobody knows at all. Nobody knows at all? Nobody knows at all. He said, in that case, we carry on now with the chasna. Why did he say that? Because every yid has a chazaka. They're not a mamzer, unless proved otherwise. There were no edim. There were no witnesses. For all you know, she might have wanted to stop this wedding taking place because she didn't like the daughter-in-law. She wasn't good enough. She wasn't a doctor or a dentist or speech therapist. As far as halacha goes,
I mean, for the woman to make that story is a little bit extreme. She's got to have some other reason, perhaps.
That's true, but
you wouldn't go along and sort of smirch your own name.
I've heard of cases of parents have gone out of their way to try and stop their kids.
Not such a way.
All right, okay. Nothing is unaccountable. As far as the halacha is concerned, Reb Moshe Feinstein was ruling that since there were no witnesses, this boy, the chosan, can go ahead and get married. Now you might say, oh, that's all very well there because there were no edim, but at least with DNA you might be able to prove one way or the other way. If the child has no DNA whatsoever from his assumed father, and he has got DNA from the suspected adulterer, then maybe that's enough. The halacha is, we do not rely on DNA. We do not make any person go through DNA checks to check on mamzerus, because there is no certainty. As we said before, from an article I was looking at, that DNA is much less specific when you're dealing with a child of a parent. If it's to determine the identity of somebody who's died and to see if that person's wife can remarry, then you're taking the DNA of that person relating to himself. But with mamzerus, you're taking on a child of somebody, and therefore it's less specific, and as far as halacha is concerned, it's not enough. You need more evidence to take away that chazaka which a person has.
Sorry, can I just ask, I'm sure he made the right decision, but if the mother had told her next door neighbour, she has told somebody, how does the next door neighbour become an aid?
That's not aidus. Aidus is when you see a woman going with another man into a secluded place.
I don't understand his question. How old is he? That doesn't necessarily...
Right, well maybe he didn't word it that way. His interest was whether anybody else knows about it. Obviously, the way he asked the question wasn't to tell her why he was asking that question. Masiach Lefitumo is to try and get information where the person who's being asked doesn't really know the reason for the question. So I think that's the way he started the conversation. You know, did anybody know about it? Did anybody see it? And so on. And she was 100% certain that nobody knew anything about it. Yes, but that's not a witness. That wouldn't help. If a man comes along and says, I make a confession. Well, if a man comes along and I make a confession that I was Mazana with this woman and this is the child, again, that's not evidence.
She may not have told us the adulterer, but she was found by him anyway.
That's right. How would he know for sure? And, okay, the boy might look so identically like this adulterer. Torah goes out of its way and the sedger of Avram holds Yitzchok to show that this was not the son of anybody else, because Sarah was captured and so on. We need halachic parameters, and the parameters are we need witnesses. Two witnesses, and if we haven't got them, then every Jew has a chazaka of being Jewish and not being a mamzer. Yerusha. Now, Yerusha actually is a bit more complicated as far as the halacha is concerned. Because there is an inyan of muchzak. Is the money already in certain people's hands? Chazaka is like half an ownership. So that is now the question. Now, let's say this person comes along and the Yerushim just got no idea who this fellow is. And this fellow comes along and says, I am one of the people entitled to this inheritance. Now, he cannot be motzi momo. He can't take money out of their possession. Because they are called muchzak. They have a chazak already on that money. So, can one rely on DNA? So, the principle is, if you claim money from somebody else, hamotzi michaveh alav haraya. Somebody who wants to take money from somebody else, on him is the onus and burden of proof. So they say, we don't know you. Now, if they're not muchzak with the money, then their psak is one can rely on DNA. And they can determine that he's entitled to the money. And we're more lenient with money matters than with Isurei Koris matters. But if they're already muchzak, and the money's already in their hands, and he says that he is a Yoresh, and just on this DNA principle, he's claiming that he is enabled to be part of that Yerusha, we say, Ein holchim b'mamon nacharov. There's a principle, you don't go with mamon simply according to the majority, lahotzi, to take money out from a muchzak. And so the psak there is that DNA is not good enough. Because the muchzak is... Now, if they want to exclude somebody from the group, if there's a number of Yerushim and they want to say, we don't think you are entitled, but he is, as chazoka, one of the group, they can't use DNA to oust him out. Then the subject of Hashor comes along, and that's conviction for criminal evidence. All poskim agree here, when it comes to criminal evidence, such as murder, we do not convict on the basis of DNA, but we need much more than that. Alpi shenayim edim yokum dovor. You need two witnesses. We've spoken about aguna, and that's basically the various aspects of halacha where we have this. On a more hashgofer level, there's a sefer called Torah Patterns by Rabbi Moshe Manuel, who talks about DNA in a hashgofer sort of context. DNA is a microcosm of the human body. And so when you look, he says that certain mitzvahs of the Torah is like a DNA of the whole Torah. Shabbos represents the Brias HaOlam. Shabbos represents the Malachas, which we refrained from the Mishkan. And the Mishkan is like a microcosm of the creation of the world. But all the Malachas put in the Mishkan represent the work which God did in the creation of the world. And if you look at various mitzvahs, he says, such as Shabbos, such as Tefillin, Arba Minim, Sukkah, Mila, there are certain aspects which come out from these which relate to the whole Torah. So a small part of the Torah and a small mitzvah of the Torah is like the DNA of the whole Torah. And last time when we met, we were talking about gematrias and squares. And Hashem's name, one of Hashem's name is Eyeh. Eyeh Asher Eyeh. When Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, who shall I tell the Bnei Yisrael whom you are? And he says, tell them Eyeh Asher Eyeh. Eyeh, the gematria is 21. Eyeh Asher Eyeh, Eyeh is written twice. 21 squared is 441, which is the gematria of MS. It is MS. So the microcosm there, you've got the relationship of Hashem to Emes. Just something small from the New Scientist magazine. DNA is always suffering chemical attacks from inside and outside cells. Each genome in each of your cells endures 30,000 damage events each day. The average adult human body contains about 10 trillion cells. When we're just thinking about the mycobacteria of what there is in each and every one of us. On a typical day, your DNA will rack up about 300,000 trillion hits, where there's constant barriers against your DNA to damage it, and there's constant repair going on in order to remedy it. Unfortunately, those who suffer from terminal illnesses, it's where their DNA has come beyond repair. But Baruch Hashem, how so many of us and all millions and millions of people can go around their daily lives and be able to withstand all these attacks on DNA, where these figures of 300,000 trillion, we can't understand. These figures are so enormous, the statistics behind it, that it makes one wonder and it begs belief how people can ask how life is just an accident. Morabu Masech Hashem, how great are your works, Hashem. So I hope I've managed in this short time to just throw a little light on what in some ways is a new dimension of learning, to take something which is really ultra-modern and to apply to it our raw principles of Torah. And with that we can appreciate Torah much more, because it applies to every single age and all circumstances in our lives. Thank you very much.